The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will now come to order. Time, Mr. Juskowitz?
7:46 PM.
Thank you, sir. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on January 5th of 2017, faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Hunterdon Review, and Express Times, posting on the district website, the main bulletin board, in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school, and finally faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mr. Juskowitz, may we please have a roll call?
Mrs. Grant?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mrs. Demerlin?
Here.
Mrs. McHugh? Mrs. Miller?
Here.
Mr. Malloy? Mrs. Olowski?
Here.
Mrs. Ratalgoda? And Mrs. Vanderoff?
Here.
Thank you. Mrs. Demerlin, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Vanderoff, can you please serve as process guardian for this evening's meeting? I have one comment under President's comments for this evening. The school calendar was not published on the website for this month, and it was delayed in getting out for the meeting today because we were making copies. Everybody should have a copy of the calendar now, and during open public session, you can come and ask any questions on the calendar if you would like to do that. So I'd like to move on to the report of the superintendent of schools. Dr. Valani, may we have your report this evening, please?
Absolutely. Good evening, everyone. First, our enrollment report as of February 1st is 1,342 students. Suspension reports for the middle school, we had two incidents, which totaled nine suspensions for one and one for the other, and one incident at Round Valley with one suspension. Twice a year, we're required to report out on HIB and violence and vandalism numbers. If, for those of you who are here in August, Mrs. Goad was here to present the HIB report at that time, including our self-assessments. Tonight, I'm going to report out on numbers for violence, vandalism, and HIB from September 1st through December 31st. And then again, next summer, we'll have the second half of the report at the conclusion of the school year. So during that time period, from September through December, we had one incident of violence, one incident of vandalism, and three founded HIBs, and the HIBs have been reported out each month as part of the superintendent's report. We have two presentations this evening, consolidated monitoring report from Mrs. Steinheimer and the budget development process that Mr. Juskowitz and I will present. Before we do that, I just want to skip down to the superintendent's update for the month. Just a couple things going on in district that are noteworthy. At Spruce Run School, they had a very busy week, the first full week in February. They celebrated the 100th day of school on Monday, February 6th, and there were a number of activities going on in the building connected to all things 100. That same week, on Friday, the Cat in the Hat visited the school as a surprise to the students. He had the opportunity to come in, listen to a story read by Mrs. Goad, and visit with all the students. They were extremely excited about his visit. And at the end of this month, Wednesday, February 22nd, the preschool lottery was held. Mrs. Steinheimer and Mrs. Goad were both present for that, and the Department of Special Services is in the process now of notifying the parents and preparing for September for preschool. At the middle school, Relay for Life event was held this past Friday, February 24th. The event was an opportunity for the community to come together to support those, including patients and caregivers, who have been impacted by cancer. Proceeds at the end of the evening totaled $53,250, so they had a fantastic event. And just as a reminder, Middle School Drama Club is presenting Honk Jr. on March 16th, 17th, and 18th. Just one other item. As a district, we had a full professional day on February 16th, and we have another PM session scheduled for March 8th. Our curriculum staff works collaboratively with teachers and administrators to schedule sessions that are meaningful and relevant to our work with students. Aside from required trainings, our schedules include sessions which allow teachers to discuss the impact of their curriculum and instruction across grade levels. We're in the process right now of planning the professional day for June at the end of the school year, as well as the days that are built into the 17-18 calendar. We have a number of exciting opportunities coming up for our staff. And just some upcoming dates, you can also check our website. There are a number of year-end events already being scheduled. The Art Fest at PMG, a number of concerts for the spring, and back-to-school nights for September are actually already scheduled as well. Thank you. Wait to go back. Yeah.
What I'd like to do is if I could move the action items first and then come back to the presentations. I'd like to do that. I'm looking for a motion, please, for action item 17-SU-013 to action item 17-SU-016. Ms. Vanderhoff, a second, please.
Second.
Any questions for Dr. Villani? No? I'd just like to add, with the Relay of Life, it was announced on Friday night that this school district raises the third largest amount of money nationally for this one-night event than anybody else in the country. So congratulations to all of our students, our staff members, and the members in our community for coming together for a good cause and then establishing national recognition for doing such a good job. I think we've raised over $250,000 in a 5 or 6 year period for the American Cancer Society. So I just wanted to bring that to light as well for everyone.
As I mentioned earlier, we have two presentations this evening. The first,
Can I please have a roll call?
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Demerle.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Miller.
Yes.
Mrs. Grant.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And then Dr. Villani, you have two presentations this evening.
Two presentations this evening. The first, Mrs. Steinheimer is going to present information on consolidated monitoring. I don't want to steal any of her thunder, but in November, the state came in to monitor our special services department, both program and fiscal areas of it. So she's going to present out tonight on the findings and go through the timeline for the next meeting as well.
Good evening. Yes? Okay. Before I begin, I just would like to thank the board for supporting all of our students and as well as our special education programs and initiatives. So the agenda for this evening is just to really explain the monitoring process, go over the findings and recommendations, as well as the next steps. So the purpose of monitoring is the New Jersey Department of Ed monitors the implementation of the IDEA grant, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. So they look at all of the funding and they want to make sure that what we write in the grant is being implemented and that all of the funds are being spent the right way and there's checks and balances all around. So IDEA has really been in effect for 35 years, beginning in 1975 with Public Law 94-142, which was the education for all handicapped children. And it really guaranteed a free and appropriate public education to students with disabilities in the least restrictive environment. Subsequent amendments to that act, and the largest amendments were in 2004 and then again in 2016, placed an increased emphasis on access into the general ed curriculum, the provision of services for young children, birth to three, and then three to five, transition planning, and accountability for the achievement of all students in the general ed curriculum. So as part of the submission, Mr. Juskowitz and I received many, many pages of documents. So we needed to present a list of all students referred for initial evaluation, for special education and related services, and for speech only, which is ESLS, eligible for speech language services, between September 2015 and October 2015. So that was the time period that the monitors were looking at. We also needed to submit a list of all students, both eligible for speech and eligible for special ed and related services, who were due for a triennial reevaluation between those same dates. So by code, every student needs to be reevaluated or considered for reevaluation every 3 years, and that's called a triennial reevaluation. We needed to submit a list of all of the students who graduated in June 2016, a list of all of our students who received programs and services out of district, a list of students receiving any kinds of service and programs in our non-public settings, as well as a list of parents, names, their native languages of the parent if it was other than English, and contact information for them, our INRS procedures and forms that were utilized in each building. These are in blue because we did submit all of these beforehand, and the monitor was able to review all of the procedures and didn't look at this specific information once they were on site. So all of our child find information, including where the documentation was sent or posted during the 2015-16 school year. So part of the code is child find, and we need to get out to the community that the school district evaluates all students between the ages of 3 and 21. So we actually send letters to all pediatricians, social service agencies, the libraries, the hospitals, and that is done every year, and we're giving information on child find. We also put child find posters in each of the offices throughout the district, including the board office. We needed to send them a list of current child study team members and their building assignments, the policy for students with disabilities taking statewide and district-wide assessments, a list of district-wide assessments per grade, and all the schedules of our related service providers. So that was for the program piece, and I'll go through that first, and then we'll go through the fiscal part. So the monitor was on site from November 1st through November 3rd. She spent just about the entire day. We submitted approximately 55 file names of files, and she sent us a list back of 28 files that she wanted to review. So we pulled those files, and we had them very easily accessible for her. She looked at 10 files for initial evaluations for students who were eligible for special education and related services, 10 reevaluation files for students who were eligible for special education and related services, 4 files for initial evaluations for students who were eligible for speech language services only, 4 files for reevaluations for students who were eligible for special education and related services only. And as well as she reviewed the documentation for our non-public students, and she reviewed the INRS plans for students who were referred for an initial evaluation, and she visited our classrooms. She visited in-class support classrooms at Round Valley, the LLD classroom at Round Valley, the autism classrooms, and our preschool disabled classroom at Spruce Run School. So what was reviewed? When the monitor comes, she's really looking at 3 main areas of focus in special education. One being the referral process. She's looking at notices, timelines, meeting participants, making sure that all of those timelines are adhered to. Once a referral is received by the Office of Special Services, a meeting needs to be held within 20 calendar days, excluding school holidays, with the child study team to determine whether or not an evaluation is warranted. She also looked at the referral process as it relates to early intervention. There are certain timelines and procedures for that. INRS, our intervention and referral services, there are timelines and procedures for that. She wanted to make sure that all meeting participants, all required meeting participants, were at the meetings, invited to the meetings, and signed in at the meetings. They also looked at the evaluation process. They wanted to make sure that consent was provided for the evaluations, that timelines were adhered to, and there were all different timelines. For initial evaluations, from the time that a parent signs consent to the time a student is in program is 90 days. For reevaluation, it's 60 days. For annual reviews, we also need to make sure that the parent has 15 days to consider that IEP prior to it going into effect. So the child study teams are really required to do a little backwards math there to figure out when due dates are needed. They also, in the evaluation process, we're looking at the six components of a functional assessment. So every evaluation needs to include not only standardized testing, but functional assessment. And those six components are a parent interview, educational or developmental history, a teacher interview, interventions that have been documented in a gen ed setting, a structured observation in other than a testing situation, and some kind of informal measures. Not every member of the child study team that's evaluating needs to conduct each of those six portions of the functional assessment, but between all of the people who are performing the testing, those six areas need to be followed. In IEP development, they're really looking at every single component of an IEP and making sure that it's up to code. So an IEP is a very lengthy document, and it has many, many different parts of it. Basically, there's a PLAF, which is a present level of academic achievement and functional performance. That's information from the testing and the teachers and the parent. That drives your goals. Based on that information, what areas does the child need to work on? And your goals drive your program and placement. In addition to those three main scenarios there, there are a lot of other questions that need to be answered. They look to make sure that there was parental consent for the initial IEP. That's the only time parental consent is needed for an IEP. After that, a parent has 15 days to review the IEP, and if we do not hear from the parent, the IEP goes into effect. And we also, they were looking at whether or not the teachers were informed of their responsibilities regarding the IEPs. In addition, they were looking at ESY considerations, supplemental aids and services, transition, post-secondary outcomes and goals, and students returning from out-of-district. There's a portion of the IEP for all of our students who are in out-of-district placements that really addresses what measures and goals is the out-of-district placement working on in order to facilitate a transition back to district. So findings. Consolidated monitoring report will be posted on the website along with this PowerPoint presentation. There were really two parts of the report. The special education programs had six findings, and the administrative or the fiscal piece had three findings. According to the Department of Education, the special education programs, we just found out on Friday, do not require a corrective action plan, although for those six findings, the Department of Special Services has already implemented procedures in place so that we are correcting all of those findings. And administrative, for the three findings, a formal corrective action plan needs to be done, and it needs to be posted on the website and presented at next month's board meeting. Okay, so findings. The findings for the special education piece. So I have to say it was a great learning experience. The monitor sat right outside of my office, and whenever she came across a file where she had a question, she had a stack of papers like this for each file she reviewed, and she needed to check off every single item there. So there were probably at least 100 things that she was looking for in each file. Whenever she had a question, she came into my office and she asked. So she might say, this report says there's an observation. However, I'm not really seeing an observation in the body of the report. Am I missing something? And then I would look at the report and say, no, you're not missing it. You know, and that one item would have us cited as not having an observation in other than a testing situation. Okay, so out of the 28 files, if there was just one thing that was noted, it was written. That's a good learning experience for us, okay? So it's the little things that that sometimes we overlook, that we really can't overlook. We can't afford to overlook anything in special education or any education, you know, for that matter. The monitor was very impressed with our procedures. She thought that we really did a nice job. Out of the six findings, two of them were more pressing than the other four, and I'll review all of them. So one of the two pressing was the least restrictive environment statement in the IEP. So when a student is removed for more than 20% of the school day from general education, so that would mean some of our resource center students and all of our students in a self-contained setting, there are three questions that need to be answered under a section of the IEP called least restrictive environment. The first question, it's a hard question to answer because it really requires a lot of thought. And the question is, what supplemental aids and services were considered to implement the students' annual goals? Explain why they were not appropriate to meet the students' needs in general education. We answered the question, and we did a great job answering the first part, but we weren't really thorough in answering the second part. So the monitor provided us with some rubrics and some samples, and the teams have already received two different trainings on how to answer that question, and that will be monitored, you know, moving forward by me. The other and probably the biggest is our INRS procedures. That's really a general education initiative. The INRS committee is really general education initiative. And the code specifically states that interventions need to be tried in the general education before a student should be referred to the child study team, with the exception of those students who need direct referral to the child study team. So what she did was she looked at referrals that were brought to the child study team by INRS, and she asked me for their INRS documentation. We have a lot of things on Google Classroom, and there were some things in Google Classroom, but what they're looking for is the actual interventions, the duration of the intervention, the frequency of the intervention, who's responsible for the intervention, and the effectiveness of that intervention. Then when you meet again, you need to review the effectiveness of that intervention. If the intervention wasn't effective, you need to either tweak it or have a new intervention. We're starting to do that now, and our forms were really not conducive to that either. So since November, we have already edited many of the INRS forms, and the administrators met on the February in-service day, and we're in the process of really tweaking our procedures, and I will be creating a procedural checklist so that the same thing is done in all of the buildings and we meet all of those requirements. The other piece of it is that the team members should really not be accepting referrals if there are no interventions. You know, if it's an INRS referral, or even if it's a staff member referral or a parent referral, because we don't know if the classroom teacher has not tried to do anything in the classroom to help the student, we don't know that the student's needs can't be met in the special in the general education setting. The other areas were transition. So for transition, we are inviting all of our students to our eighth grade transition meetings, or they are attending. We're not sending all of them a separate invitation. All right, so their name is on the IEP as attending the meeting, but they didn't get their own invitation. That's required by code, okay? It's a little thing. Transition for a student that's not in eighth grade, but turning 14, during the life of the IEP. So we could technically have a seventh grader who will be turning 14 during seventh grade. We need to conduct the transition part of that IEP for that student as well. We did it for some. I think there was one that we did not do it for. So that was something else that we really need to focus on. So I talked about the functional assessment, the least restrictive environment, the transition piece, INRS. Not all participants were always at our meetings. Specifically, two files were cited. One was the general education teacher was not at an IEP meeting for a student who is eligible for speech-language services only. That means it was only the parent and the speech therapist. That's not really a team. And the other was a general ed teacher was not present or did not sign or was not excused from an IEP meeting that was held out of district. So the team members know that they either have to excuse that general education teacher, that general education teacher needs to be available by phone, or that general ed teacher needs to be at the meeting. Okay? So the administrative submission. So this is the checks and balances piece. So what needed to be provided was the IDEA grant application, any amendments, and the final report, the accounting reports, board minutes and resolutions related to the grant, payroll and payroll-related expenditures, non-payroll expenditures, selected budget policies, purchasing manual, standard operating procedures, comprehensive annual financial report, the annual management report, the board secretary report for all funds, the contracts with non-public service providers, the 2015 local budget, the local funds worksheet showing the level of support in two preceding years, verification of exemptions and of authority, and that's a lot. So what they were really looking for was to make sure that everything that is done in the business office and everything that we're doing is constantly checking, all right? The IDEA grant, it's approximately this year, $400,000. Some of that money goes to our non-public schools in the area. So the grant is divided into two pieces, basic and preschool. Our basic allotment was $389,559 this year. Of that, our non-public schools get $95,380, and we get $324,229. They get $95,380. We use our basic funds in the IDEA grant to offset our out-of-district tuitions. Preschool, the district was allotted $12,375. Non-public got $750, and we got $11,625. And we don't have any out-of-district preschoolers between the ages of 3 and 5, so we really use that money for programs, contracted consultants, materials, equipment, and a lot of technology for all of our students at Spruce that are ages 3 to 5. And 5 does include some of our kindergarten students, so they reap the benefits of that as well. So the first finding was that students' names were included on vendor invoices for out-of-district placements, which violates student confidentiality. So when the out-of-district placement sends us the bill each month for the students, they were putting their name on it. So we have already corrected that practice, and beginning in the month of February, all invoices now have the student ID number on it, the SID number. So the corrective action is to adopt or revise procedures to ensure that confidentiality is maintained and that only persons having educational responsibility for those services have access to this information. This has already been corrected. Second finding was that certain board-approved policies and standard operating procedures maintained by the district are out of date and in need of revision. So, and AJ, if you want to chime in here. So last year about this time, we were in the process of changing vendors for our policies. So we're working on this, and it was just that things weren't matching what was on the website and what was provided in hard copy. And that's really why we were cited for this, and our operating procedural manual was written or last updated in 2009. So that's something that the corrective action is to make sure that all of our policies are cohesive and match what's in a book and what's on the website, and that procedural manual is updated yearly. and on several occasions, the district failed to issue a purchase order prior to services being rendered. So the procedure is when the Office of Special Services wants to order anything, when anybody in the district wants to order anything, we need to complete a purchase order. Once a purchase order is approved, we can order the product. What we think happened here is this was a piece of technology that was ordered. And I believe what happened was the purchase order was originally completed, we ordered it, but then the company told us there was an updated model. We ordered the updated model, but we didn't do the purchase order before we told the company that we'll take the updated model. So live and learn. You have to make sure that all of that is followed. So this is, again, just a procedural type of a situation that we really have to focus on and be aware of. So what has been done? The verbal results of program monitoring were shared with CST members and therapists on November 16th, 2016. INRS forms were shared with building administrators, and we're updating those forms. Training via PowerPoint was conducted on February 15th, 2017, again with the child study team members and the therapists, and Dr. Villani was present for that. And all non-public schools were instructed to place SID numbers on invoices in lieu of student names. Next steps, at the March board meeting, there will be a presentation of the corrective action plan to the board, and that will be posted on the website. In May, the special education monitor will coordinate a date to come back and follow up with me. The IEPs that did not answer LRE question number one well, she is going to go back to those IEPs because an annual review has to be held in order to correct that. So she will be coming, looking at that, and then probably pulling another one or two files to make sure that we're doing it correctly. Okay? And the auditor is requested to comment on areas of noncompliance and recommendations in the next certified audit that's submitted to the Board of Ed. Any questions?
Do any board members have questions?
I have a question. Thinking about the policy aspect, mm-hmm. and knowing that some of the policies weren't up to date, moving forward, is there going to be some type of a checklist so that we make sure that those particular policies are updated on an annual or triennial basis, whatever the need be?
Yes, that's the conversation that Dr. Villani and Mr. Juskowitz and myself had, that we would be definitely rotating and having that kind of a checklist.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions for Mrs. Steinheimer? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Villani, there's a second presentation this evening.
Good evening again. Mrs. Steinheimer, thank you so much for your presentation on consolidated monitoring. Mr. Juskowitz and I are going to discuss with you how the basics of budget development and how that impacts the Clinton Township School District. Before I get started and through the first few slides, I want to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about the PowerPoint template. It may seem minor, but I want to just go over the template with you so you have an understanding of where we are as a district and what we're doing moving forward. We're looking to bring some standardization to some of the things that we do across the district. You'll notice that the template that we're using, Mr. Juskowitz and I, is the same as Mrs. Steinheimer. As we go through the first couple slides, I'll go through the outline, but we're trying to make sure that our brand as Clinton Township is consistent. So you may see teachers, if you're in professional development sessions, you may see this template. At upcoming board presentations, you will see this template. So just kind of get our name and some consistency out there. As we talk about the budget development process, two parts, I'm going to talk about the template and about the process. As we open up each presentation, we're going to talk about the essential questions. For the teachers, you know you're doing this in your classroom. What are those big picture ideas that you want the people listening to the presentation or your students to come away with? So as we're talking tonight, these are the three big ideas that we hope by the end of the presentation you'll have a better understanding of. What are the components of a school district budget? How does one develop a school district budget? And what is specifically included in the Clinton Township budget? Disappear. There you go. After the essential question, after you're looking at that big picture, what comes next? Specifically, what are you trying to get out of whatever information you're trying to convey? So for us then, we're talking about the objective. The specific objective of this session is to provide an understanding of the components of and process for developing a school district budget. So we're going to talk about general budget overview, the components of the Clinton Township budget, and then the calendar so you have an understanding of how we will move forward as a district.
Thank you, Dr. Villani.
I will continue on with the rest of the presentation at this point. The general budget overview. What is a school budget? It's a plan which provides school district leaders and members of the school community a clear description of needs and associated expenditures in order to run a school district. Basically, the needs of each member of our leadership team are discussed on an individual level with myself and the superintendent. After those needs are discussed, the costs associated with meeting those needs to achieve their goals are determined. What does it do? Describes a district's plan for anticipated revenues and expenditures, translates intangible missions, operations, and objectives into reality by outlining and providing specific programs and funding and financial terms. We're looking to connect district goals to resources, and it creates a dialogue to inform choices among various programs competing for limited available resources. Now I'd like to discuss zero-based budgets. Budget starts from zero each year. There's no reference to previous year's budgets, and each budget inclusion must be justified. Budgets are prepared by dividing operations into decision units, and individual units then aggregate to decision packages on basis of program, activities, goals, and organizational units. Zero-based budget benefits. Staff are involved in selecting resource allocations, fosters public confidence in the budgeting process, elimination of outdated efforts and/or expenditures, and concentration of resources where most effective, particularly useful when overall spending must be reduced. Now we have our Clinton Township considerations. In our district, there are four buildings, and of those four buildings, our enrollment comprises of 1,334 students. This was taken on our October 15 count of each year. The state requires an upload of student data. This information is considered the official data for the school year, and thus that is why this number is constantly referenced. The October 15th upload is used throughout the school year for various reporting purposes. The enrollment directly correlates with free and reduced lunch funding the school receives from federal and state funding. Grant funding, as Mrs. Steinhammer had alluded to before, our district receives funding from IDEA and No Child Left Behind, and our free and reduced numbers, along with the enrollment, affect some of the money that we receive from federal and state sources. Also, we have an E-rate funding, which is another area that we receive money based upon our internet. At one point in time, we were receiving money for our use of our telephones, but that has been phased out as of last year. Now going forward, with the number that we have of 1,334, and based upon those students that have free and reduced, we're able to have subsidized part of our internet access that we have going forward is reimbursed back from the federal government up to 40%. The components of our district budget, or there are three components: expenditures, revenue sources, and tax levy. Within those expenditures, we have salaries and benefits, which comprise majority of our budget. Next, we have variable costs. Variable costs are curriculum and instruction, professional development, general supplies and textbooks. And lastly, our required spending. Those deal with insurance, transportation, special education spending, professional services, maintenance and custodial aspect of our budget, state mandated special ed, professional services and evaluation system, state assessments, and also unfunded mandates such as preschool. Here is a pie chart that represents the three aspects of our budget. 77% of it is from salaries and benefits. The required part of spending is 14.41%. And lastly, the variable costs, which represent 8.23%. I'm sorry. In that area, this is where we have a little bit of wiggle room when it comes to our budget. Basically, the other two pieces are dictated by contracts and other aspects of funding or spending that we need to do by state mandates. Second is our revenue sources. As we know, most of our budget is comprised of our local taxes, tuition, building use fees that we receive for people utilizing our buildings, and our surplus. Surplus helps us stabilize our tax rate every year when we go to create and develop a budget. The other additional areas that we have are federal and state funding. Here is where we have another component or pie chart of how all of our revenues are divvied up according to what we have. Local tax levy, as we know, comprises most of our budget. 10.39% is for state aid. Tuition is about just under 2% of our revenue source, and the federal aid, we get about 1.22%, and the remaining amounts are less than 1%. And those include surplus and others such as the building rental and interest from our checking accounts. Lastly, the tax levy. We take the total required spending and subtract the revenues from sources other than taxes. The difference is the local taxes needed to support the budget. Here again is a pie chart with our property tax distribution. As you see, our K through 8 district comprises the 45.76% of the property tax distribution. North Hunter and Voorhees School District is at 26.5%, but of the amount of students that are sent over to North Hunter, basically Clinton sends over about 50% of those students that go to that district. So when you look at that, that's kind of half of our 45% that our taxes are being utilized, or portion of the tax bill comes from our K through 8 district. And when you look at North Hunterdon, it kind of correlates with both of those numbers. The remaining amounts are through municipal, county, and other open space tax, library tax, and Clinton Township open space tax. Our budget calendar, October to January, the Chief School Administrator and School Business Administrator work collaboratively with building and district administrators to determine district needs and review draft changes. In October, we have paperwork that is sent out to each of the building principals, and they develop those budgets with the principals, and those are then sent over to our district, to my district, to my office, and that's where the compiling of all the data gets put into our budget to comprise the whole entire piece. From January to February, I comprise all those numbers and put them all together, and through the budget software, I have to put all the information in and determine what the tax rate will be based upon the needs of the district. February to March. Department of Education releases our state aid amounts, and that completes the piece of our puzzle. What then we need to do is either assess, and hopefully that our aid that we'll be receiving will either increase or remain the same. If there's any decreases in state aid, then we'll have to look at making some type of cuts, and that will be done with myself and the superintendent. Again, with our budget calendar, preliminary budget is presented to the board committees. Board of Education reviews and provides input to that preliminary budget, and the preliminary budget is sent to the county for approval. In April, we have our public hearing, and a board approves approval of the final budget. Also, in January of every year, the superintendent and the school business administrator participate in the mid-year budget review for the current year budget by county personnel. And what they look at is to see how we're spending and if our spending is in line with what the state wants us to have in our spending patterns. And lastly, ongoing, we have auditors that come in twice a year to review our financials to ensure that we are correctly doing the things that the state mandates us to do every year regarding how we conduct our business within the district. Next steps are our budget presentation and Board of Education preliminary vote is on March 13th. March 21st, the budget is sent to the Hunterdon County Office of the Superintendent of Schools. And on April 24th, the final budget presentation is made. Between March 21st and April 24th, if there are any changes that need to be made to some information that might turn the budget in one direction or another, those can be made during those times, discussed within the board, and be approved on April 24th. Hopefully, these essential questions that were proposed in the beginning of this presentation will allow you to now be able to answer these questions on your own, provided the information that I've given you. And that concludes my presentation.
Mr. Juskowitz talked earlier about expenditures and how we have, I believe it was 8.23% of our budget. That's really where the flexibility lies. Unfortunately, a really small portion of the budget to have to work within the flexibility. This year, so that I can help develop an understanding of the process and so that we can have a solid understanding of how we were budgeting within our buildings and our departments. As Mr. Juskowitz discussed, in October, November, through those months, we met, the two of us met individually with each building and department administrator to really get a picture of how they were budgeting themselves and then how we could take that information and translate it into a district budget to see if there was any place where, for example, Mr. Draw has his technology budget, but a building principal may have been budgeting for tech, and how we were looking at what the buildings were doing and what the departments were doing to have a consistent district budget. So looking in those pieces, again, curriculum from the building perspective and curriculum from the curriculum department perspective. So we were able to work with the administrators to realign some of those expenditures so we had a better understanding of exactly where money was going and how we would, for example, again, not to pick on Tim, but how we would budget for tech, how we would budget for curriculum, because if we get to the point where we do need to start making cuts, again, those cuts are coming from that 8.23%, which directly impacts our students. So we want the least impact on our students as possible. So we want to make sure we had that solid understanding this year.
I'd like to thank you very much for listening to this presentation.
I'd like to now open the floor to our first public comments section on agenda items only. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw 9322 limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow for everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This, too, is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments that a member of the public will make at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to the question or questions, they will be answered at the conclusion of the public comment section. We will gather all the questions asked at the podium this evening and answer them at the conclusion of this section. To the extent any other action or research is warranted, it will be addressed by the board president or superintendent of schools as appropriate. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on this topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the Board of Education this evening on agenda items only, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes. Would anyone like to address the board this evening?
Hi, I'm Abby Vanderoff, and I live on 16 Foxfire Lane, Clinton, New Jersey.
I'm Regan Moore. I live at 8 Heather Hill Way in Lebanon.
I'm Lily Kumar. I live at 11 Maple Street in Lebanon.
So we're all Christians, and our faith is really important to us, and we're excited to try and get Fellowship of Christian Athletes up and running here at the middle school.
We've been working really hard with Mr. Greco and Mrs. Hammond to get it started, and we're super excited to get started.
The lessons that we'll be teaching our peers will be affect their life from this point forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Would anybody else like to address the board this evening? I'm seeing none. I'd like to then open the floor for our first recognition of the public. All the parameters that I mentioned for the public comment section on agenda items only will apply here as well. If you'd like to address the board this evening, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 20 minutes.
Lana Brennan, 21 Fawn Drive. I just had a couple questions. The calendar, is that something, I don't know what causes it to take as long, but I know that North had theirs ready in October and had it finalized by November. So if it's possible, it's very helpful. Also, I had a question, especially with the presentation for the INRS for referrals. Are parents notified if a child is referred? And also, with those referrals, how many times is a kid referred before his child is evaluated or checked on? Two other questions. FF-172, am I clear on it being 2015? On the date of, I just wanted to make sure it was a right year. And then my other question is for PN-148, the maternity leave or disability replacement. I was under the impression that we went through Source for Teachers for that, and that just seemed an odd one that we just did a random one for, and why that would be the case, whereas my daughter previously has had a teacher where it was a whole year and it wasn't done like this. So I was just wondering about that. And that's it. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address the board this evening? Okay, seeing none. Dr. Villani, would you like to address a question on PN-148, please?
Yeah, I can do 172 if you want as well. We're going to work backwards. PN-148 for the maternity leave. Going through Source for Teachers, they had only two certified candidates to offer us. One lived in Cherry Hill, and he was not willing to make the drive every day. And the other, upon interview, was not a good fit for our district. So we were able to secure Mr. Buskey, who has previous experience in the district, on a, obviously short-term basis, not permanent, with permission of source for teachers.
172?
172, finance, facilities and finance. Without getting into too much detail, this involves a student who the district questioned the placement at the end of the 14-15 school year. They questioned the state. The state took a year to respond to us. They responded to us in September, October of this year. Then we had legwork to do as a district to talk with the child's previous district before the child was here. That's what the time frame was for this. So it is the 14-15 school year when the child was allegedly in district, but having the state involved delayed the process a little bit. Regarding INRS, do you want to address it? Okay.
So I believe there were two questions about INRS, and one is whether or not parents were informed. Say it again. Are notified when their child is referred to INRS. In some buildings, yes, that is the case, and in others, it's not. But yes, they will be informed from now on, and that's part of our new procedures that we're putting in place, and that is required. The other question, I believe, was how long do they need to be referred? Okay. So typically a student is referred once to INRS, and say they're referred in Spruce Run School toward the end of the school year, the team meets and the teacher's concerns are discussed, and an INRS plan is written, and there's baseline data, and there are some strategies and interventions that will be implemented in the classroom. Generally, 4 to 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, the student is then discussed again at INRS, and then the team talks about the effectiveness of those strategies, again based on data. Sometimes the strategies are not effective, and then rather than make a direct referral to the child study team, there might be a discussion that says, are there some other strategies that we need to try, or why weren't these strategies effective? Okay, if the strategies are effective, we might continue with those strategies until the child could generalize the skill and kind of owns it and is able to do it on their own. And then perhaps another area is focused on. So it's really individualized. But if a student is not making progress after many interventions are considered and tried, then there is a referral to the child study team. Does that help? Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Fine.
General question.
I'm going to make one change to the agenda right now. The discussion for calendar is scheduled to be discussed under the policy and curriculum, but since the question was brought up, I'd like to ask Ms. McLaughlin, who's the chair of our policy and curriculum committee, to please introduce the calendar, explain it to the board.
Sure. So just in reference to the question that occurred, the district takes into consideration North's calendar. So in order for us to take into consideration their calendar has to be completed. So we wouldn't be able to do it simultaneously, and we often wouldn't be able to do it right after, because then we need to meet in committee and have discussions with the superintendent based on her recommendations. So that's just procedural how it's been that way. And for the record, North has recently been adapting their calendar earlier than previously. That helps. Our calendar this year, everybody should have gotten copies that I handed out. We do several things in committee. We take into consideration North's calendar. We know it's a challenge because we're a regional school district, and we send to North. At the same time, we have discussed here many times, we have our own challenges with aligning to North exactly. One of the major ones being air conditioning. And so over the last several years, North has begun to start their calendar much earlier. I believe the first day of school for freshmen this year is August 23rd. And we have decided in committee that we don't think it's in the best interest of our students to start as early as North does. On the flip side of that, North is ending extremely early this year. I believe their last day of school is June 5th with no days built in, although they will add on. My understanding is they'll add on to the calendar, and graduation is June 12th of next year for North. So we looked at their calendar as one piece of consideration. We, whenever possible, try to align winter vacation and spring recess so that it meets the needs. We also have some professional day obligations in the district through the CTA contract, so we looked at those particular days. And this year, this is the calendar that we set forth based on the recommendation of our superintendent. She comes to the committee meeting with a couple versions of the calendar, and we talk through any issues, making sure that we're cognizant of professional development days, as well as whether it's a national school election or NJA convention, for example. So this year, we are proposing that the teachers come back on August 30th for Professional Development Day, and then on August 31st will be the Open House and Professional Development Day. Labor Day will be September 4th, and our students would start September 5th. As Dr. Villani commented earlier, the back-to-school nights have already all been scheduled. So those are all on the website as well. We will be closed for Yom Kippur, Professional Development Day in October. We have parent-teacher conferences traditionally in November. Election Day, we have off because, as many of you know, the schools are used as a voting facility, and there will be parent-teacher conferences. We have days off for NJA convention, which are contractual. Thanksgiving recess, winter recess, Martin Luther King Day, schools will be closed. We have a professional development day in February. We have President's Day off, another professional early dismissal day in February, spring recess, Memorial Day will be closed, and then our tentative last day of school will be June 20th, with that being graduation and then a professional development day at the end of the year as per contract. So that is our proposed calendar for next year.
Do any board members have questions for Mrs. McLaughlin relative to the calendar?
Dr. Bonney, any other comments?
Oh, sure. So at the bottom of the calendar, you'll notice that we have four emergency closing days. In the event that additional days are needed, the following days will be used as makeup days, so we have them listed at the bottom. In an event that all emergency closing days are not used, they'll be given back at the end of the year. And I do know that North doesn't have that flexibility because they have project graduation, so we do that a little bit differently. And this year, we haven't had much snow, but moving forward, who knows what will happen.
No more. We're done with snow.
I want snow.
Saturday, you can have it.
Okay, so we'll move the vote and keep the vote in the policy and curriculum section. But thank you, Mrs. McLaughlin. I appreciate that. I'd like to move on at this point in the meeting to the report of our business administrator and board secretary, Mr. Juskowitz. Sir, can we have your report, please?
The date of the Board of Education's next regularly scheduled meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 13, 2017. At 7:30 p.m. in the auditorium of the Clinton Township Middle School, at which time this 2017-18 budget presentation will be held on that date. And in addition, on April 24th, you'll have the second budget presentation held on that day, and that'll be also here at 7:30 p.m. in the auditorium of the Clinton Township Middle School. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Juskowitz. I'm looking for a motion, please, on 17-BA023 to 17-BA026, please.
Motion.
Rachel. A second, please.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Miller. Any questions for Mr. Juskowitz this evening? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call, Mr. Juskowitz?
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes to all, but I have to abstain on the executive session minutes for 17-BA023.
Mrs. Miller?
Yes.
Mrs. Demily?
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky?
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderoff?
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Juskowitz. I'd like to move on to the report of our committees. The Board of Education has three standard committees that report out each month: Facilities and Finance, Policy and Curriculum, and Personnel Negotiations. Ms. Olasky is our chair for Facilities and Finance. May we have your committee's report, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. The Facilities and Finance Committee met once since the January board meeting, and we have 22 action items for this month. Aside from the payment of monthly bills and ongoing brick repointing and wastewater treatment plant maintenance projects, there are a few items of note. There are several reimbursement requests for seminars, conferences, and professional development courses. There is an amendment to prior action item 17FF143 from the January meeting to include lodging in the amount of $104 for Dr. Villani when she attended Texpo last month. There are also several requests related to student transportation, home instruction, and various consultant approvals. There's a payment for an out-of-district tuition from the 2014-15 school year for a child that moved into our district from the Flemington-Raritan district. As Dr. Villani previously stated, this matter was recently settled with the state. There's an agreement to coordinate with ESC for bus services for the 2017-18 school year. The board will contract with Life Touch Photography for the 2017-18 school year. There is an amendment to the 2016-17 school year IDEA grant preschool budget. There will be an increase in the preschool monthly tuition rate in the 2017-18 school year from $275 to $300 per month. There is a transfer of monies from the capital reserve account to increase the maintenance budget in the 2016-17 and 17-18 school years in order to cover costs associated with various maintenance projects across the four buildings. We received two $500 grants from ExxonMobil for science materials and school supplies for CTMS, and the board would like to thank them for their continued generosity. And last but certainly not least, the Facilities and Finance Committee continues to finalize the 2017-18 school year budget with Dr. Villani and Mr. Juskowitz, which will be presented at the March 13th board meeting. With that, I would like to put forth a motion for action items 17FF163 through 17FF185.
Thank you, Ms. Olowski. I'm looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Vanderhoff. Any questions for Mrs. Olowski this evening on Facilities and Finance? Seeing none, Mr. Juskowitz, may we please have a roll call, sir?
Mrs. Olowski.
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. Demerle.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Miller.
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, sir. Moving on to our second committee report of the evening, our personnel negotiations. Ms. Vanderhoff is the chair for that particular committee. Ms. Vanderhoff, may we please have your report, please?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everyone. The Personnel and Negotiations Committee met two times since our last board meeting, and on the agenda we have 18 items tonight for approval. Items 17-PN-140 to 17-PN-158. There's one approval of sick leave time from the sick bank. There is one substitute nurse appointment, one home instruction approval for one student. There are two teacher assistants for the after-school arts club. There's also another club appointment for the 2016-17 school year at CTMS, looking for approval. There is one item that relates to staff members participating in professional development days, and these two employees, the days occur on days where they don't typically work, so we need approval for that. There are six staff members who are set to receive stipends as athletic advisors. That's also on the agenda. There's one staff member who will be a golf advisor and two volunteer golf chaperones that are also on the agenda. There's one custodial hire at Spruce Run School. One item relates to a maternity leave replacement at CTMS. There are two new leave of absences requested and two amendments to previous motions related to leave of absences. There's one appointment of an employee as an administrative intern to a New Jersey university, and there's one approval of a North Hunterdon High School student who's going to provide volunteer hours to the child study team. So with that, I'd like to move forward action item 17-PN-140 to 17-PN-158.
Thank you, Ms. Vanderhoff. Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second, Ms. Olowski. Any questions for Ms. Vanderhoff this evening? No, seeing none. Mr. Juskowitz, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. Olowski.
Yes.
Mrs. Demerle.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Miller.
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, sir. And finally, policy and curriculum. Mrs. McLaughlin.
Good evening. The Policy and Curriculum Committee met last week. We have five action items this evening. The first one being the calendar, which I just discussed earlier. We have two action items tonight that are grants through the Clinton Township Foundation for Educational Excellence. Teachers in the district are eligible to apply for grants through the foundation. There is a committee that reviews the grants, And there are two grants this time that the board, after being recommended to us from the superintendent, will be approving tonight. One is for Project Body Image and Media Literacy in the amount of $4,000. That is an assembly for students at the middle school. And there is also a $16,320 foundation grant for Discovery Education Science Tech books. They're not actually books. They're supplemental resources to be used, I believe, at the middle school. We have two field trips tonight. Mr. Tariff will be taking our musical groups on his annual pilgrimage to Dorney Park, May 19th. And Mrs. Dominakis and Ms. Abrams will be studying physics once again at Six Flags on May 25th. Earlier, Mrs. Steinheimer alluded to some special education policies that needed to be updated. So we have first readings tonight for those two policies. And that is our report for tonight. So with that being said, I'd like to move action items 17PC035 through 17PC039.
Thank you, Ms. McLaughlin. Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Mrs. Miller. Any questions for Mrs. McLaughlin this evening? Seeing none, may we have roll call?
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Miller.
Yes.
Mrs. Demerle.
Yes.
Mrs. Olowski.
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, sir. We have an ad hoc committee called the Feasibility of Closing a School. And in March of 2016, this ad hoc committee gave a report. I should say that the committee was given the responsibility of researching and evaluating the feasibility of closing a school. We made a presentation in March of 2016. We reviewed the results of our research into whether or not the district would or could immediately close one of its four school buildings under the district's current enrollment of 2016 in the school year of 2016-17. The research reported that night included the results of a demographic study conducted by Statistical Forecasting Inc., led by Dr. Richard Gripp, a capacity analysis of each building. It reviewed options for utilizing existing building space in our current structures and identified the pros and cons for optional use within each of our buildings. And it reviewed the options for utilization under a district building consolidation structure, going from four buildings to three buildings. And it identified the pros and cons for closing in each building on an individual basis. With the information that the committee had gathered, they recommended to the full Board of Education that the district could not close a school for 2016 or 2017 school years for several reasons. Research completed by the committee revealed that there were too many risks associated with consolidating all of our students into three buildings for the school years 16-17 and 17-18. The first risk identified with the utilization of only three buildings is that the district's three remaining buildings would be at full capacity, so that if we consolidated into three buildings, all three buildings would be at its full capacity. And there are a lot of risks associated with operating the school district at capacity. And the first is an inability for us to expand our student enrollment, and if we got an influx of students, it would be difficult for us to accept an overabundance or influx of students. Last year, we had 23 new students come into the eighth grade, and because we had the extra space, we were able to accommodate them. But if we were at capacity and that were to happen, we would not have been able to do that. The second risk is also associated with operating the district at capacity. This risk encompasses the potential inability of the district to meet requirements of students with special needs. Since we cannot predict the type and number of students with special needs in the future, the district needs to make sure that we have the flexibility to add required resource rooms, self-contained rooms, and support rooms if we had an influx of children that needed to have those accommodations. Lastly, if we operated to capacity, we would run the risk of not being able to adhere to any new special education laws that might come into play over the next few years. There are legal and financial ramifications for a district if you cannot deliver services for children with special needs. So we need to maintain some flexibility and make sure that we can meet the needs of our special needs students. There were also several financial implications that the committee reported that evening in March of last year. First, the district would need to create additional space for the sixth grade at CTMS, and the cost to convert those breakout rooms at CTMS was estimated at $850,000 by our architect. We would also need new bathrooms at Patrick McGarren if a waiver was not granted to the school district. There would also be a large amount of legal fees associated with the realignment of personnel. And finally, the district would have to prove to both the state and the county that we can consolidate our district by going through a very rigorous and extensive approval process. Now, the committee went on and said that there are key triggers that would have to occur in order for the district to avoid any of the risks that I just cited. The triggers are as follows. Enrollment in grades 6, 7, and 8 must be six sections of students with class sizes that do not violate the district's policy on student enrollment by classroom. The New Jersey Department of Education and an executive county superintendent must approve the consolidation. All operational requirements and building upgrades must be finalized. And we must identify a sustainable revenue-generating program to be developed and implemented in the fourth building. Now, at the conclusion of the committee's presentation last year, they also committed to taking steps in 2016 and 17 school year to further this process and prepare the district for consolidation. We committed to executing the following this year. We committed to monitoring the district enrollment numbers, which we've done. The committee also committed to conduct a cost analysis of consolidation savings. We also committed to conduct a more formal, more robust feasibility study, a full consolidation that looked at things like transportation, staffing, time frame, and building modifications. We committed to working with the Division of School Finance of the New Jersey Department of Education and the Executive County Superintendent offices and formally identify the steps involved in the required approval process and begin to seek the approval process to consolidate our district. We committed to work with the architect to plan on how to consolidate space in the middle school and to make other accommodations in the remaining buildings. And finally, we committed to identifying a revenue generating business to establish in the fourth building. So now that our superintendent has been in district for almost 8 months, the committee's begun to work with Dr. Villani to move this process forward and fulfill the commitments made to the community by the board of March of last year. Therefore, I'd like to report that the ad hoc committee met in February and has taken the following steps to continue to meet our commitments publicly stated last March. First, we've identified an expert to conduct a cost analysis for consolidating the district into three buildings and to do an extensive feasibility analysis regarding the consolidated process to identify in-district processes required to close a school and to consolidate. I've asked Mr. Gagliardi, our board attorney, to work with the state and county to properly identify the steps and to put a timeline around getting approval to close a school. We've identified other districts that have closed a school within the last few years and have reached out to them in an effort to learn about any analysis that they took to evaluate the potential for consolidating their district, and also to help us identify the processes to which they went through to consolidate. This research will ensure that we conduct a very thorough, efficient, and effective analysis and process as we look to close a school. We've also begun to gather published articles and published research related to school closings. Later this spring, we'll have more details regarding this process, but this is where this committee stands as of today. I'd like to now move on to old business of the board. Ms. McLaughlin is our representative for the Herndon County School Boards Association. Ms. McLaughlin has Herndon County School Boards met.
They did have a meeting last week. It was focused on new member training for newly elected board members, and I was unable to attend that meeting.
Okay, thank you. I know that the ESC will have their meeting early next week, and I will be attending that meeting as well. Is there any other old business that the board would like to bring up this evening? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to new business. Does the board have any new business that they would like to bring up this evening? No? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to then open the floor to our second recognition of the public. This section is for members of the public to express themselves on school matters of community interest. We'll follow the same guidelines as I detailed in the first public comment section on agenda items only. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 20 minutes.
Good evening. Francis Goger. I live in Bethlehem Township, and I represent Bethlehem Township and Hampton on the Northumberland Voorhees Board of Education. I'm also president of the Board of Education this year. And first off, I'd like to thank the board for their support, and I'd like to thank members of the community for their support in passing the referendum. It was passed pretty overwhelmingly in every single sending district, which was a great achievement from everybody concerned. And it allows us to spend less dollars fixing up old buildings and more dollars going back into the educational process and improvements. And secondly, I'd like to hold a roundtable discussion with the presidents sometime later in the spring. So, Madam President, I'd like to invite you and your Vice President to that, and I look forward to having kind of a meeting in place that we can exchange ideas, exchange concerns among all the sending districts, and see if we can have some, get some unity amongst ourselves as far as things that we have in common, amongst all the boards and all the sending districts. So, thank you, and hope to see you in the spring.
Mr. Goger, thank you for coming this evening, and I'm sure Mrs. McLaughlin, we'll see you later in the spring at your meeting. Thank you for the invitation. Anyone else like to address the board this evening? I'm seeing none. Mr. Juskiewicz, can you read your favorite executive session statement, please?
Whereas while the Senator Byron M. Bayer Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6 et sec, requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10:4-12b sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session, i.e. without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10:4-12b to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session, whereas any collective bargaining agreement or the terms and conditions of which are proposed for inclusion in any collective bargaining agreement, including the negotiation of terms and conditions with employees or representatives of employees of the public body. Collective bargaining contract discussed is between the Clinton Township Board of Education and the Clinton Township Administration Association and the Clinton Township Board of Education and the Clinton Township Education Association. And whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public body is or may become a party, any matters falling within the attorney-client privilege to the extent that confidentiality is required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as a lawyer. The nature of the matter described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality as attorney-client privilege in negotiations. Whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 60 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for only the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Thank you, Mr. Juskiewicz. I'm looking for a motion, please, to go into executive session. I'm looking for a second, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We are now in executive session. Looking for a motion to reconvene the meeting, please?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Meeting is now reconvened. Looking for a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meeting is adjourned.